嗨。
Welcome to the Go To Room podcast with your hosts, Sophia Garcia and Tess Canarisha. Tune in as we interview those affected by childhood cancer, gather perspectives, and help others find comfort in their expertise.
Today, we'll be discussing the back-end work of Cancer Kids First and the journey behind it.
Hello and welcome to the Go To Room podcast. We're your hosts, Sophia Garcia and Tess Canarisha, and joining us today, we have Olivia Zhang, the founder of CKF.
Thank you for taking the time to join us on our podcast, Olivia. Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys so much for having me on. So my name is Olivia and I am a senior at McLean High School and I am the founder and CEO of Cancer Kids First. And along my journey in kind of advancing health equity, I've served on a lot of different health boards and helped other nonprofits grow themselves.
All right. So we're just going to go into the questions. So the first question is, what inspired you to create this organization? And how did you initially gain interest in helping those going through cancer?
So I started Cancer Kids First originally because I lost two loved ones to cancer. And so this is kind of, you know, how I envisioned myself being able to make an impact on a deeper level, if that makes sense. So when my grandfather was diagnosed with cancer, I would visit him in China while he was going through chemo and kind of making like different pieces of artwork and also like clay sculptures in particular was how I connected with him during this time. And I also created like binder covers, bracelets, paintings, and I sold them on Instagram to raise funds for his treatments. And then with my elementary school teacher who was diagnosed shortly after my grandfather, we like connected over art because art was something that she really loved as well. And I used to always bring in drawings for her and things like that. And so art was like a big part of how I connected with both of them. And so when they passed away, I wanted to kind of channel this like connection that I made with them through art with like our first service program at Cancer Kids First. And originally, I think what I was thinking of was just doing an Instagram account to sell artwork and raise money for kids with cancer going through treatments. But I think that after reading more about like what nonprofits can do on a deeper level, that's what I wanted to kind of initiate because I thought it would be more helpful to patients and their families. And kind of following that vein, my grandfather was a teacher and then obviously my elementary school teacher, she was a teacher as well. And so I kind of wanted to honor them in the sense of like following their footsteps by creating a loving community for kids with cancer, similar to the one that they had created for me and all their students.
What are some of the early challenges you faced when creating Cancer Kids First, and how do they differ or remain the same compared to the challenges you face now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think definitely some of the early challenges was, as a youth-led organization, I think that there's always a negative stigma around the idea of being youth-led. And so when approaching like hospitals for partnerships and also just companies, other nonprofits that are more established, like I think it was very difficult at first to get started because when you call yourself like a youth-led nonprofit, adults either think that because of your like age or your inexperience that, you know, you're not fully committed to the work that you do. And so I think that was definitely a challenge, was getting all those partnerships started and getting people, especially adults, to actually believe in us. And then luckily we were able to combat this, I think, by showing your passion and just continuously like reaching out to them. Like we used to call hospitals like 5 times a day, trying to just establish that firsthand connection. And then in terms of kind of challenges I face now, I think that because we are such a more established organization now, I think that when we approach other companies and organizations for partnerships, we can list out, you know, the patients that we've been able to help already, the people that we've already been able to partner with. And so I think that we definitely bypassed that early challenge. And also sometimes now we have like organizations and companies reaching out to us. But I think that something new that has risen because of our growth as an organization is definitely how we can, with so many, you know, volunteer members, how we can make sure that every volunteer is feeling as if their work is going towards, you know, helping the cause that they kind of signed up for. And also making sure that they're able to interact with other volunteers. And so building that team and community sense when everybody is like in different countries and different time zones, things like that. And I think another challenge is definitely just being able to still maintain that one-on-one connection with patients and families, because I think a challenge that we come across as like a bigger organization now is still being able to connect deeply with our patients and families, as well as our volunteers. Because when you're a smaller organization and you only have like a few connections, it's way easier to, you know, put in time and effort into that. And so I think as a bigger organization now, we're still trying to make sure that everybody that we help or talk to is feeling like they are being, I guess, like seen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the organizations that started when people were younger that are leading them, a lot of them mentioned like the same challenges where like adults weren't taking them seriously. But from what we've heard in the past, like having a team or building up a team that people can see as legitimate a lot really helps a lot. So how did you initially build your team of volunteers, and what qualities did you look for in these early team members?
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, first off, like this was a big lesson I had to learn myself, because I was kind of like, when I was first starting this, I was like, oh, I'm just going to have, you know, my friends serve in my other leadership position roles. And then because I thought I would work well with them. However, eventually I had to realize that, you know, I had to separate my like personal and professional life, and I had to prioritize people who would put cancer kids first. Cancer kids first. And then so that's why, like, looking in terms of team members, I think that the biggest trait was having that personal connection to cancer. A lot of the people on our team, they have had somebody pass away from cancer, or they have had a family member go through cancer. And so they know firsthand like the struggles. And I think that way they are so committed to our cause, because, you know, they've actually been impacted by it. And I think another characteristic, I mean, is definitely just being hardworking. But also I think a better term is like having grit. And so that's being able to overcome like obstacles. And then the third one is just being proactive. And so I think that our team members, they're very committed to obviously like their job description and what they're supposed to do for Cancer Kids First, but they're also always looking for new ways to elevate Cancer Kids First. And I think I remember somebody actually suggested doing this podcast from our team. And so that's always like how you can see our team members like thinking of new ways that we can advance our mission or better our services. So those are a few qualities. And then in terms of like how I built the initial team of volunteers, I think it was just honestly first just like word of mouth through like my high school for interested teens and teens that I thought showed a lot of these qualities, as well as people that I met through like different conferences that I attended, or clubs that I was a part of. And then eventually just using social media, because I think that expands the amount of people that we're able to reach, because there's so many, I think, capable teenagers who would love to be a part of Cancer Kids First. And so social media gives us essentially like a platform to reach them.
So you mentioned earlier how it was kind of hard to establish partnerships, especially because they didn't think that as a teenager you had as much experience. So how did you went about establishing supporters and partnerships earlier, and how has this changed over time?
Yeah, so I think that like I mentioned before, it was mainly honestly just being like showcasing that passion, I think, because I think passion transcends like any age level or experience level. And it was just consistently reaching out. Like we made lists of pediatric cancer hospitals in each state, and then we used to call and email them so many times a day until somebody eventually got back to us. And then we shared, you know, like why we started this, and we communicated how we were going to provide services that were best fit for their patients and their needs. And I think that flexibility, in addition to us being like, if you let us do this, like for one time, like we promise you that we can show our capabilities. I think that that was like, those two were the biggest things that helped us start the partnerships, as well as just being smart about when we reached out to companies, because for instance, September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. And so that's like a really good month to capitalize on getting those partnerships, because we are a childhood cancer organization. So reaching out to organizations or companies, sorry, like Kendra Scott during that time, because they're these companies with a goal of like helping charities, they're always more inclined to help you out when it's like a day or a month relating to your cause. And so I think just being strategic about that was a really great way as well.
So another aspect that comes with being a youth-led organization is having to deal with like and balance a lot of other things like school, for instance. So how did you prioritize and balance the various responsibilities of leading a nonprofit organization such as fundraising, program development, and community engagement, along with other things in your life?
So I think that this was definitely something that, you know, another big lesson that I had to learn, because as an older sister, I think I've always had the idea that, you know, I have to do everything independently and set a good example and kind of be perfect in a sense. And so when I was starting Cancer Kids First, also because I was so, I mean, this was something so close to my heart, I was like, oh, I have like a vision for everything, for social media, for fundraising, for events that we do. And I wanted to control or like manage everything on my own. And so something that I definitely had to learn after I had a lot of failing grades in math, which is my worst subject. And my teacher had sat me down and, you know, he talked to me about how I couldn't continue doing what I was doing, and micromanaging in a sense. And that was when I realized that I had to delegate a lot of my tasks to very capable team members. And I had to trust that they would be able to carry out Cancer Kids First vision and trust their ideas and their insights. And so I think delegation was definitely a big part in being able to kind of balance everything, but also just I live by my planner. All my friends know that if I don't have my planner, then I'm just not going to do well that day, because my planner is definitely my lifeline. And so that allows me to structure in, you know, all my assignments, things like that, so I don't forget anything, and plan out all my activities. But also just doing techniques like time blocking, I think that's a really good way for me to manage my time. So time blocking is kind of when, you know, you set your alarm for like 1 hour for to finish chemistry homework, and then you can only work on that for that 1 hour. And I think having that timer like ticking down, it makes me be more productive and, you know, like not be distracted by my phone. Because sometimes I remember like I used to pause for like a 15 minute break to go on my phone in the middle of doing work. And so I think having that timer counting down, it puts some pressure on you, you know, so that you're like focused on what you're doing. And I think another thing is just knowing yourself and knowing when you are most productive and when you need a break. I think learning to take care of myself was definitely a big learning curve too. And so I know now that I work best in the mornings. And so if that's like getting up at 6 a.m. to get started on CKF work before I go to school, sometimes I do that, or working like during lunch or study halls at my school. And then at nighttime, knowing that that's when my brain doesn't, I guess, function the most appropriately. And so that's when I take a break and like hang out with friends or family, things like that.
So can you explain your daily responsibilities as the founder of CKF?
Yeah, so I always say that when people ask me this, I think it's a little bit hard to, because each day I think differs, but usually what happens is I tend to do a lot of different meetings, either with hospital coordinators or different nonprofits or businesses that we're developing partnerships with. So I do meetings for those. And then I also meet with a lot of our team's leaders. So usually that's like our events heads, our fundraising heads, just to plan out, you know, for the next couple of weeks and months, what our events and things like that look like. I think another thing is just working on responding back to like emails about different partnerships or service programs, initiatives, talking with like parents and patients, and then getting feedback on how our service programs are and how we can improve that for the future. As well as number three is definitely just thinking ahead and setting goals for our team regarding, you know, how our team environment wants to look like in the next couple of months, how we want to progress in the next few years, what we really want to work on. And just compiling data and seeing all the patients that we've helped, you know, looking at their insights on what new programs, what new service programs we can establish, or what we need to kind of work on. I think another big part is just talking with different team leaders, like our care packages directors, our arts program directors, talking to them about how we can make volunteering more impactful, and also coordinating with them how we can just, I think, increase, I guess, our impact regarding the various service programs that they lead. But most recently, we have welcomed a lot of new team members. And so that's been really exciting, because we have some seniors leaving. And so now we're onboarding some underclassmen. And so a big part of my role as CEO is definitely interviewing these candidates, as well as training them and onboarding them onto our team officially. And so walking them through the process of how everything works on our organization, things like that. I think that's been what I've been most working on in the past couple of weeks.
So with creating and operating a nonprofit this big at such a young age, it can be kind of scary when there's like a lot of other nonprofits led by people that are older typically. So what was your biggest fear or concern when starting this organization, and how have you overcome them?
Yeah, so I think a big fear of mine was just that people would see this not as a reliable organization. And you really touched on a good point. I mean, seeing all these outstanding organizations in the cancer field, because there are so many, I think also just trying to set Cancer Kids First apart from all of these, you know, and getting that like unique value proposition, which I learned in marketing class yesterday. But also just, I think, having people realize that we as high schoolers, we weren't doing this for like our resumes or like college apps, but because childhood cancer is like a big issue that needs to be addressed. And I think that was like a big fear that people wouldn't take us seriously. And I think a way that I overcame this was finding mentors who helped me in, I think, expanding like my communication skills, my presentation skills, even like my pitching skills, because I think that was when I realized that there are adults who do believe in me, who do believe in this cause. And they taught me a lot of different things that I now implement, not only in Cancer Kids First, but also my daily life. And so that gave me a lot of confidence, I think, when approaching adults, because I remember like 6 months into CKF, like starting CKF, we had hit kind of a, I don't know the right word for this, but like a period of stagnation, I guess, where I felt as if we weren't making any progress in terms of getting partnerships. And so I felt really unmotivated and I didn't want to continue doing CKF. But I think getting our first, like helping our first patient, that was definitely a big motivator, and something that helped me overcome this kind of fear, because I remember just listening to her story and also her parents' story about how much they had struggled and then how our help had impacted them. That made me realize like, oh, we are making a difference, you know, and this organization that I had dreamed of, it is becoming a reality. And I think now I keep like a folder in my camera roll. It's called Words. And basically I screenshot all the messages from like parents, our partners, volunteers even, about how Cancer Kids First had made a difference in their lives. And that's what I go back to every time I need motivation. And I feel, I guess, this same fear coming up again about like, oh, we aren't good enough. That's kind of what I look back to give me motivation and remind myself that what we are doing is meaningful and it is like making a difference.
So how has CKF used technology and social media to promote its work and engage with the supporters and community members?
So I think social media was definitely a huge way, you know, and a huge reason why we grew so much, because over the pandemic, I was definitely addicted to TikTok, but I also noticed all my friends, everybody around me, TikTok was definitely, you know, on the rise. And so I wanted to capitalize kind of on this trend. And so I had social media managers come in. I chose two really amazing people, Layla and Koshi, who both go to my school. And they were so instrumental in launching our Cancer Kids First TikTok page. And they started posting a lot of videos. And we were really, I think, strategic about, you know, what times we post, the different hashtags we used, the trending sounds, graphics, things like that. And I think that was a big way that we were able to share our mission and get volunteers interested, as well as get our organization out there in terms of gaining more partnerships, gaining more like parents who reached out to us for help, things like that. It was just a way for us to essentially like put Cancer Kids First on the map, you know, and introduce ourselves to the world. And I think our second video, we got like 1.6 or 1.4 million likes or views, which was absolutely insane. And so that was when we were able to reach so many different countries. And so I really credit social media marketing and our amazing social media heads for doing all of that. And another big way, I think, is definitely Instagram and being able to show everybody, you know, the patients that we've helped, the events that we've initiated, because I think pictures are worth, you know, 1,000 words, and they do show that we are a organization that is making a difference. And it's a good way to commemorate, I think, past events as well and connect with patients who are on Instagram. And so definitely just utilizing Instagram as a way to build connections was a way that technology really supported our growth. And then I think another way, just in general, I think other social media accounts like Facebook, Twitter, because all the parents are on Facebook and Twitter, and actually like looking through the Google Forms that we send out about feedback, we've realized that a lot of parents had actually shared our organization in like Facebook support groups and different like Twitter group chats that they had. And so it was really cool to just realize the impact that social media has on bringing like smaller organizations to light.
So looking back, do you think you would have done anything differently in the process of starting or growing CKF?
I think this is a good question. So I think, I mean, along the way, I've definitely made mistakes, you know, and I think in the perfect world, you know, I wouldn't have made those mistakes from like choosing like only friends to lead or being too hesitant about telling a director that was doing something wrong to kind of like fix their mistake. But ultimately, I like to live life like with no regrets. And I think that every mistake that I made, every mistake that Cancer Kids First made, it was a big part in just learning and growing. And so honestly, I don't think I would go back and change anything. I think that because like we are where we are today because of like everything that happened in the past, if that makes sense. And so there was definitely, you know, things that could have gone smoother, or maybe like things that would have kind of shortened the process of like establishing our organization. But I think off the top of my mind, I can't really think of anything that I would go back and change. Maybe if I had to like choose something, it would be, I think we kind of rushed into making ourselves a official nonprofit because there's kind of that legal aspect of establishing yourself as a 501c3 nonprofit. But usually what happens is people do like a community project first. And then once they have like a certain volunteer base, a certain amount of funds raised, a certain amount of like partner hospitals, then they file for nonprofit status. And we kind of, I think, rushed too much into filing for nonprofit status first rather than just building ourselves up as a community organization first. And I think having that base would have made it easier for us to just gain credibility as an organization. So maybe kind of doing that flipped way, that would maybe be something that I would change. But again, I think that everything that we did, it was a big part in why we are where we are today.
So I think that's all we have for questions today, but thank you so much for all your thoughtful responses.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
If you or someone you know are looking to support childhood cancer patients and help them experience a better childhood but are stuck on how, Cancer Kids First may be the answer for you. Cancer Kids First is a nonprofit organization started by high schooler Olivia Zhang that aims to improve the childhoods of cancer patients. Through volunteer work, donations, fundraising, and the creation of this podcast, those working with Cancer Kids First work to further its mission. If you're interested, go to www.cancerkidsfirst.org/get involved to get involved.
Another way to support the mission of Cancer Kids First is to listen to this podcast and follow us on our Instagram and TikTok at The Go To Rim Podcast and Twitter at TGR_onair. You can also get in touch with us through our email, thegotorimpodcast@gmail.com. Episodes will be airing 2 times a month.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Go To Rim Podcast.
If you have any ideas for or want to be involved with future episodes, make sure to check out the link in our Instagram bio.
Have a nice day and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.